Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know, the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breeze.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz coming to you. And I hope everybody had a great weekend, enjoyed some of those football games. And all I can say is, if you're a football fan, especially at Houston, my God, is that the worst performance I've ever seen by a quarterback in a playoff game in the 50 years I've been watching it. I cannot believe how bad they were, and unfortunately, they had nobody else to go to. But that's that kind of sums up the markets of last week as well. And, you know, as we take a look back at what happened, you know, during the week, last week, you know, everybody wants to blame China for the problems. And certainly they helped along the problem. They might have helped intensify some of the selling pressure. But overall, the real problems go back to the same thing as we've talked about quite a bit. We have no growth. The jobs number, if you want to look at it, now there's different ways to look at it and there's different ways to report it. But of course, the government is always going to report it in the most advantageous way. And I don't blame them, but that's what they do. But if you look at it and you listen to the actual people who know it, the real gain was only 11,000 jobs. Now, again, it just depends on how you want to calculate it. But here's the picture. Okay, we lost just over 3 million jobs in 2015. So year over year, we lost 3 million jobs. So do you really want to tell me how robust the jobs growth was in 2015? You want to tell me that creating almost all service jobs, which means McDonald's, Walmart, bars, waitresses, and again, there's nothing wrong with those jobs. But for the middle class to really survive, they need back the construction, manufacturing, mining jobs, which lost about 8%. So we've lost 162,000 construction and manufacturing jobs. So while you watch all of the experts and economists drool all over themselves about how great the economy is, take a look, I guess, and the best place to always look is to look within your own bank account. Start there. Look at your trading or your investing account. Move there. If you're doing much better, I'm thrilled. I'm happy for you. I think it's great. But most of the middle class, and that's who I care about, okay, are struggling because they're working. I have friends that are working two and three jobs just trying to make their rent or mortgage payment. Okay. You know, I have not seen this dramatic recovery that they keep telling me is happening. Yeah, if you live in New York, nothing has really changed. You're kind of back to normal and a couple of the other spots. But generally, you want to start off in the Midwest. I mean, where we have farming, I mean, the farmers are getting slaughtered. Okay? We've got the commodity collapse not seen before. 18-year lows in the Bloomberg Commodity Index. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that goods that they produce, most of them are losing money. So we're going to have, you know, the unintended consequences of all of the BS that has been done through the Federal Reserve, through the government, and through cheap money has created this deflationary scenario, pushing the price of the dollar higher. And because commodities are benchmarked against the U.S. dollar, forcing commodity prices lower. So with lower commodity prices, so if you talk about soybeans, wheat, and corn, you know, which I don't think we're going to stop eating anytime soon, so I'd assume that those products are still going to be in demand. What you're seeing is that the farmers are now stuck. What do? Do they hold? They dump? And that becomes a bigger problem. Now, I believe that they should hold. I believe we're going to see higher prices. Again, I believe that eventually the economy and everything else will turn around. But, of course, under the current scope of who's running the economy, basically, you know, Janet Yellen, I find it hard to see that it's going to happen fast. But I do believe that, you know, commodities will find a base. I mean, me personally, I am looking to invest and be in the commodity space. I think that will be the outperformer of the of this new year, 2016. But I think you have to, you know, obviously you have to be willing to hold. You have to be willing to take a little pain. And I wouldn't jump in here full bore. I would certainly look at opportunities to get in. I would look for, you know, to take small percentages of what my investing capital was and start to nibble, okay, down here. I think that that is prudent. You know, again, one of the things you have to remember is when the boat gets very crowded on one side, it cannot go to that side much more, okay? You know, and I think that the bearers have taken a real good whack at the commodities. And don't get me wrong, they have put them under extreme pressure. And of course, the extreme pressure means less jobs, less participation, less money to spend, which means that places like basic places like John Deere and Caterpillar and people who supply farmers with basic stuff are going to see a problem. And because, again, if the farmers and producers are not making money, then they're not going to spend anything. Now, the other big problem that nobody's talking about right now in that community is the land leases of people that own farmland that have leased it out, or guys that are leasing land to increase their size, knowing based on their lease and what they've got, how much they have to sell for. Well, guess what? This year is going to create a big problem in land in the Midwest as well. And all of it based on the crappy monetary policy in which we're watching. So if you think that, you know, everything's going to be okay and listen to the idiots at the Federal Reserve, think again. However, one of the things that you always want to think about, okay, is how to be protected. Whether you're a farmer or a producer, whether you're an investor, whatever you have that is in a liquid market that can be protected synthetically through the options model without exposing yourself to risk, without exposing yourself to margin calls, without having a huge cost to do so. Now, why wouldn't you want to have the ability to hedge your crops, hedge your cattle, livestock, or hedge your equities? To me, it doesn't make sense. The cost is so minimal in retrospect to the amount of money that you have tied up. I would think that you would be dying to have yourself protected and have no downside risk while being able to benefit from the upside. That would be, again, that's just my opinion, and maybe because it's my program, but it works. And that's, you know, I want you to see it work. And certainly reach out to me, even if you want just some information. Just shoot me an email. You can shoot me at my direct email at Todd, T-O-D-D, Horowitz, H-O-R-W-I-T-Z, at hotmail.com, or Bubba at BubbaTrading.com. But check out TheBubbaShow.org or BubbaTrading.com and look at that program. And also look at what we're writing. And if you miss a show, LibertyTalk.fm is the place to get it on demand. This is The Bubba Show. We'll step out of a break and we'll be right back.
Stay with me, man. Listen up. This is philosophical.
Welcome back to Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for my local expert, one of my greatest friends, one of my most favorite people in the world, Jane King, Lila Max Media, the Ka-Ching Report. You got to get that report, guys, because it's really awesome and it's always good stuff. Jane King, Happy New Year and welcome back to the show.
Happy New Year, and I think the Ka-Ching Report would be great today because it's been a really stressful, tough week for anybody in the financial industry, and we could all use a laugh.
Yeah, and it always is great, and we post it up on the Bubba Report, on the Bubba Show. So, Jane, you know, you and I talked, and we said that we thought things were a little weak, and we would expect some action and some volatility, and you pointed out, rightfully so, that the markets are probably a little bit overdone, and there was really no reason for them to be as high as they were, and of course, the week brought some pretty dramatic selling and some crazy stuff in China, and you're a holder in China. How are you feeling as a, first of all, a prognosticator, and then as an investor?
Well, I got to tell you, a little seasick after this week. So, you know, it's funny. We had this great vacation, nice and relaxing. I got lots of rest, saw family, saw friends, come back, and bam. I mean, you know, it's just all of a sudden, the first day, way down, and, you know, it looks like things maybe China's got a better control of the situation at this point. But, my kid's college education is in a Chinese mutual fund, and, I actually looked at it this week. It took some bravery. I had to, like, to work up the guts to do that, but I looked at it. It is taking a hit, and, it's kind of tough to see that. But I knew when I bought it, and I've had it for several years now, like 10, 12 years. So I knew that it would go through some volatile times, but still tough to see yet losing money. But hopefully in the long term, China will still come through.
Well, I mean, I think obviously markets will work their way out. And China is, you know, is manipulative and secretive and, you know, with all the stuff they do, which is, we would say in this country, not kosher. But at the end of the day, you know, I think it was great, especially for people like you. They took the circuit breakers off, which only meant that the Chinese government owns 52% of their stock market anyways. And when they took the circuit breakers off, that would be very bullish because that just meant that the government was going to go ahead and buy more securities. They weren't going to let the market fall. And of course, we saw a minor rally. But, you know, of course, we're not going to be in the mess we're in forever. I mean, but we are in a very, very bad time right now, especially for places like China, because they base their economy on manufacturing and commodities. And of course, the commodities are just an absolute disaster. I mean, we're at 18-year lows in the Bloomberg Index. What are you thinking in that space?
Well, it's sad. And I mean, it tells us, I think, something much bigger. And it tells us the global economy is slowing down. And, you know, this is similar to what we saw in 2008. We saw oil start first. Commodities showed it before the stock market showed it. I don't recall it taking this long in 2008. It seemed to happen much faster. Of course, we had the housing crisis that also happened at the same time. So I think, we should just get ready for a global slowdown. That's what commodities are telling us. Interesting to see Saudi Aramco thinking about issuing an IPO to try to boost their finances. I mean, that's going to be a monster IPO. So just shows how desperate Saudis are and how low oil prices have gone.
Now, you know, you're a big reporter and you're a big time, you know, celebrity all over the country and you're doing stuff. And, you know, obviously on a lot of people's mind is the stock of Apple. And, you know, Apple's obviously going through some rough times right now. But still, you know, I mean, you know, everybody forgets that they split 7-for-1. So it's still a $700 stock approximately and still the most profitable company in the world. What do you think? Are you worried about Apple? Is Apple done? Has Apple become IBM now, or is this just a temporary blip in their radar?
Well, isn't it funny how as soon as a stock is added to the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it immediately is like a negative with a stock? They all of a sudden that can't be innovative anymore. You know, it's Apple just, you know, was on an amazing run. I mean, from 2003 to 2012 or 13 or so. And a company can't do that forever. It seems like now they're becoming more followers instead of innovators. You know, the Apple Music was kind of behind. Everybody else was doing it already. Where before, and, you know, this is probably Steve Jobs. I mean, he was just an amazing person that was able to foresee what consumers wanted and what people just really would stand in line to buy, and Apple just doesn't have that magic anymore. Still an amazing company. I have all Apple products. I love them, but the excitement isn't there anymore, and I'm not sure what they're going to do to get it back.
Yeah, I know. You know, it does be, you know, one of the problems, obviously, is when companies become so big, it's hard to keep innovating, and obviously Steve Jobs was a big part of it. So now, you know, we look, you know, around, and, you know, of course, Amazon's been under a little pressure, and the retail numbers have been bad. So I ask you, you know, everybody kept saying, you and I did not agree, but everybody kept saying that, well, this low gas price is going to create more retail sales. And of course, that has not proved to be correct. Now, I say that it needs, you know, when you get prices so low, people aren't working. I mean, you know, the jobs we're getting are not very good. So what do you think now of these low gas prices and this low oil? Do you think that's good or bad for the economy overall?
Well, I think it tells us things are slowing down. I mean, it's, you know, there's a point where oil and gas get so low it's scary, because it's telling you something much bigger than just, oh, I'm saving $20 a week on a tank of gas or whatever. So, you know, if this really is foretelling of a huge slowdown, then this is a much bigger problem, and people are going to have much bigger problems than just high gas prices. You know, I feel like it kind of got that way this week. There's, you know, we saw WTI crude down with $32 a barrel. We're at 12, 13-year lows in crude, even piercing the financial crisis lows. So some are calling, I even heard a prediction of $10 to $12 a barrel. I mean, you know, when you get in situations like this, there's always people who come out and make these extreme predictions. And that one seems a little extreme, although I guess it is possible. But, you know, I think, you know, at some point, it's going to mean more about the overall economy than it is just about saving a few bucks every week.
You know, I mean, listen, we, you know, if you remember, we did have this move originally started from $9 or $10 crude to begin with. So now here's the one thing I want to get your opinion on. My theory is, you know, everybody says, well, we had this big trouble in the Middle East and everything's going on crazy, and oil normally would have jumped dramatically through that crisis. But I say we are no longer affected by what goes on in the Middle East because we have enough of our own oil. In fact, obviously, we're going to start exporting oil. And if you look at the spread between Brent and WTI, which used to be about $20 wide, now it's flat. In fact, in some days, WTI goes over Brent. I say that the Mideast has no real effect on our oil prices here, and we really, it's really a non-event anymore. What do you say?
Well, I think that's certainly becoming the truth. And, you know, we saw the tensions between Saudi and Iran this week, and oil was kind of like, yeah, whatever. I think, you know, if this were 10, 12 years ago, we would have seen a huge jump up in oil. So what is the Middle East going to do? I mean, they've put all of their economic eggs into oil, and they don't have, I mean, they have, you know, the women aren't educated in many of the Middle Eastern countries. They don't really have an infrastructure of innovation, of venture capital. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen economically to the Middle East and what that means for the rest of the world.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that the Mideast has a major impact anymore on anything. I don't know that they were ever part of really what's going on. I mean, you know, obviously we're more concerned with Germany and China and Japan, and I don't know that the rest of that really has any major impact on what we do here. I think the Mideast is just the Mideast. I don't think there's any real economic impact. Do you think they have some economic impact here?
Well, what I'm referring to is you've got all these young men who are already high unemployment. It's going to get even higher. Restless. I mean, what does that mean in terms of terrorism? What does that mean for unrest in the Middle East? I mean, it could cause some other global political problems rather than just economic problems.
Well, that's for sure, because, you know, when you create poor people, they tend to go to things that are of trouble, and that always causes, you know, stress among, and of course, it's been a very scary thing with all the terrorism. But Jane King, you got about 30 seconds. You got any final words for investors who might be sweating it out?
Well, I think next week's going to be more stable. So just like hang in there, and then let's evaluate everything. And I think the Fed is going to wait several months before we see any interest rate increase. Too much volatility right now.
And you have heard it from our expert, our friend, our favorite, Jane King, the Ka-Ching Report, Lila Max Media, always out there. And make sure you catch her on your local station, because she is coast to coast. Jane King, thank you so much for being here. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Todd.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We were visiting with our friend, one of our favorites, Jane King. Always brings us a little smile to our face. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be back after the break. Make sure you get on demand at libertytalk.fm. When you miss a show, The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you later. We'll see you after the break. Sorry.
Margie said, Roy, you ain't listening.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it is time for the man, the myth, the legend, one of my great guys, one of my best analysts, Mike McClone. Mike McClone, what's up, my brother? Happy New Year. Good to have you back on.
Yeah. Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me, and welcome to the new year. The market had a pretty rough welcome for most people, it appears.
Yeah, it was a little bit rough, but I don't think anything that we didn't talk about, I think that, you know, right before we said, be careful because, you know, this is these markets tend to get a little bit overvalued. So I think, you know, you being the number one analyst, I think the first thing I want you to kind of comment on is last Friday's jobs number. What did you take from it? What does it mean to you? Give us, break it down for us.
It was good. Overall, the number was good, stronger than expected. Revisions were higher. Non-farm payrolls, 292,000. That's awesome. It's great. Unemployment rate, 5%. Average hourly earnings picked up a little bit. And, you know, nothing bad about that number except the labor force participation rate still increases. It's close to 63%. But it's old news. So overall, I think that is probably going to cap a bit of a overdone market for the first week of the year. And that's why I'm getting a little bit of a change of the tone here. Overall, I think you and I both agree we have a big issue. Volatility is picking up. Markets are overvalued. But I'm very suspicious of, before the unemployment number, how the marketplace, the S&P 500, basically, at least until Friday, had the worst beginning of the year ever. And, yeah, we all are bearish, but there's one thing we learn in volatile bear markets is you don't want to sell it in a hole. So I look at last week as, okay, in the short term, maybe a little bit of a short-term buying opportunity, wait for better levels. Just be careful selling it when it plunges like that. I have a feeling with the unemployment, I'm proving things are not bad in the States, that it just got a little bit overdone in the short term.
Okay, now again, let's talk about this for a minute. Overdone in comparison to what? Now, we're only down 5%. You know, one thing I'm really concerned about with the average investor is you see these big numbers, 100, 200 points. Now, if anybody owns a stock, and I've used this example before, but if you own a stock, you know, $180 stock that goes up or down a dollar or two in a day, you don't even think about it. It just goes up or down a dollar a day. So the 100-point move or a 200-point move in the Dow Jones is the same as your $180 stock going up or down a dollar or two. So I think we do get confused with that. But So we did have a 5% break, and it was fairly heavily sold. And, you know, it's something that, you know, obviously a little bit related to China. Now, what about, let's bring China into this for a minute. What did you think about the action in China? What did you think about their stupid circuit breaker ideas? And what do you think about the 29 minute record market day? And when, what happened? What were your thoughts there?
Well, this is something you and I are really big advocates of, is I think they are learning the hard way how not to try to manipulate markets. As you and I would say, let markets seek their own levels. And this is one of the key things that Jim Rickards brings out in a lot of his books, is government officials generally are lawyers, and they generally have no clue about markets. They might listen, but they don't always do the right thing. So I think, as of what they did, the circuit breakers were definitely the wrong thing to do. It forced people to front run the circuit breakers. Now, they eliminated that on Friday, and they're probably supporting the market. Who knows really what they're doing? But I think they're learning the hard way, the best thing to do the markets is let them seek their own levels, and maybe in the short term do kind of like what we do in the States. If the market's down 20% or down a significant, you just slow down trading. You just let people think about it a little bit. But this, to me, is just the lesson that you and I have discussed. Markets got to seek their own levels, and that's what's happening. Most people know the manipulation in China is part of the reason you got to be very careful. They're supporting you, but the government's buying, and it seems like retail's selling. That's a bit of a scary situation.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, we knew Thursday night when they pulled off the circuit breakers that the market was going to rally, because all that meant is that the market was starting to break again. They would just come in and buy. They already owned 52% of their own market, so it was evident that they were going to go ahead and buy into it if there was any selling. And, of course, it worked out to be a pretty good session. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, and that's kind of how I came up with this thought from last week is, you know, we have to be careful with our listeners to not be trying to trade the market. But the way I saw last week was it was a little bit overdone. The as of Thursday night, the full expectation when the U.S. market closed was that China was going to collapse. Well, it didn't. And the whole entire world didn't collapse. So that was basically priced in, and it didn't happen. So that's why I see in the short term, let's be careful not selling here. If anything, maybe try to pick up some short-term bargains, but be careful trading and wait for much better levels. And if there's any lesson that we've all learned in bear markets, notably 2008, is they're notorious for massive short-covering rallies, and you never want to sell them on the way down. You want to wait for better levels. So that's what I'm suspicious of now. China's part of it. China was an impetus. And one of the key things that really concerned me last week, because you look at like the bond market, it did not do so well. Part of that is because China's been selling their treasuries. But also I look at value, at least in the short term. One of the biggest markets you and I have been watching is the small cap index. In the ETFs, it's the IWM ETF. It made a new low it took out last year's low, which was, you know, something that was pretty bad. It matched the low from 2014. And that's at a level, at least the first time down, I want to be careful selling there and be very careful, maybe even buy a little bit and wait for a recovery. If it sustains below that level, we have a bigger problem. But I see this as, you know, this is weak number one of a 52-week year. I think we've got a lot of problems ahead of us, but let's be prudent and careful and try not to panic. And like, I think what we want to be is we want to sellers. We want to sell when the market's getting a little rich and getting a little bit euphoric, which is going to happen, and we never want to be gotta sellers. I think last week we saw a lot of gotta sellers. They sold because they had to.
Right, and I think it's important you bring this up, Mike, because, you know, you and I both know the trader versus investor argument, you know, and you know, obviously with technology, everybody's looking at their 401k. You're not selling your 401k today. What are you looking at it for? So right or wrong, you have to really separate what you're trying to accomplish and understand. You know, Mike is very good about pointing out, you know, how to turn your portfolio and kind of work it to be to the best advantage of the market. But never once does he say puke out and panic sell. He says, look at things and rearrange, but you're investing. You're not trading the market. Whereas if you're trading the market, like me as a trader, I'm waiting for a big, one of those short covering nasty rallies. And I want to find a level and I want to sell into it on a short-term basis. I want to get shorted because that's what I do as a trader. But as an investor, I'm not puking out. I'm looking for opportunities to pick up some bargains because, you know, I think that right now, for example, the energy space and the basic material space, there's probably some bargains there. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, exactly. As I heard someone say today when I listened to a lot of this news, is you want to be a liquidity provider, meaning when the market gets really cheap, yeah, be there to buy. And maybe that was what we should have done a little bit last week, but that's one thing where you and I definitely have to temper our enthusiasm. We're traders at heart, and most of our listeners are probably not. So that's why I always like to focus on investors. The bottom line is underweight stocks, overweight cash, overweight some value investments like bonds and silver and gold. And if you did that, so far you're looking great and you're feeling good and you're sleeping at night. And by the way, if and or when things get worse, you're going to be a liquidity provider to be able to pick up assets at good prices.
Yeah, and I agree. But again, me personally, I'm not a buyer here. I'm still, full clarification, I own long-term equities. I'm just hedged. So I'm not worried about that. But in the short term, I'm really a seller, but I'm not a seller here. Again, you cannot chase the market down. Okay. You never want to be a seller into what we call, as traders, you're selling into the hole. That's not what you do as an investor or as a trader, because we know as the boat fills up, Mike, and you get too many people on one side of the market, no matter either long or short, what usually happens? Tell the listeners what happens when that happens.
Well, people get hammered. I mean, as we learned in Trading Pits, is like you said, never sell in the hole. Don't be a pig. Just be a prudent. It's be responsive. And what I see from last week is it's happening the way we've discussed. It's probably going to be a precursor. Like the December of 2007 was the same thing. It was that last week of December, and it kind of told you if things got volatile and did not happen they would the way they should. It left you with a bad feeling about the year. I think that's what's happening for this year, but for now and for the short term, is I'm very concerned that everybody's bared up too much too early. And so let's seek that opportunity and be careful and wait for your opportunities. One thing, like oil got just way too cheap last week. One thing that has really been getting hammered is the high yield HYG. It didn't really move last week. So markets just kind of caught up to them. So,
right.
Looking forward, and I've got some other thoughts.
Hold that thought, my brother. All right, when we come back, Mr. McClone, I want you to tell me where is value in the market, because I know you have a feel of what you think where there is value. So when we come back, I want you to tell us where is the value. Where is me as a value investor? Where am I going? Because, one of the things you always want to do is when you have cash, you want to always pick up assets. And if you can pick them up at values, you're finding yourself in a much better position overall. And that's what we talk about. And that's why we have my guy, Mike McClone, on all the time, because he gets the value and he understands how the markets work. This is The Bubba Show. Make sure you go to BubbaTrading.com or TheBubbaShow.org and check out our hedging program. These are the things that will allow you not to have to worry, and you'll be able to sleep at night knowing that when the market goes down, you're actually going to be able to compound your portfolio and pick up more assets with the cash that you were able to make off the hedge. So I recommend you strongly going to check that out at BubbaTrading.com or TheBubbaShow.org. Plus, if you go there, you get to read all these articles in which generally The Bubba Show is about 6 months ahead of a lot of the news you end up getting. So you kind of know what's going on because we do a little bit better research and we're not afraid to put it out there. As you know from listening to The Bubba Show, I'll say anything and I want you to be prepared. So we're with my man, Mike McClone. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwich. We're going to stop out here for a break. Make sure if you miss any of the shows, you go to libertytalk.fm because all of The Bubba Shows are on demand. Libertytalk.fm. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwich. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwich, with my guy, Mike McClone, one of the, I'd say, in the top 1% of analysts on the street, understands it. And again, one of the biggest reasons is he's got the pedigree, the background, because I will say, and then we're going to even talk to Mike about this after he answers the first question, but there is nothing like being a trader to understand how markets really function. So, Mr. McClone, where is, as Clara Peller used to say, where's the beef? Where's the value, baby?
Well, I see value percolating in silver and gold. A lot of that's going to be dollar related. And it's so ironic. Things we've been talking about is the dollar, in terms of the index, looks like it's topping. part of the reason because the Fed has already tightened. There's so much tightening priced in, and the stock market's starting to go down. Now, what happened last week is the stock market keeps going down. The Fed's not going to tighten, and that should be very bullish for the dollar. The point is, part of this is one of the scenarios that's if they don't tighten, it's, I'm sorry, bearish for the dollar, but it's all priced in. So there's a good reversion potential there, which would be good for oil, commodities, gold, things that have just been beat up and are so cheap, they're kind of how much cheaper can they get? The thing is also pointed out is what are the markets, you know, to really keep an eye on. The dollar index is really coiled up to move and looks like it's potentially topping. Obviously, that's related to the stock market. The treasury bond market is getting so coiled up. I'm just waiting for its next move, and it likely is going to be down in yield, up in price. So watching TLT for that, but that was kind of one of the disappointing things from last week. And the emerging market index is broken down. The high yield ETFs have broken down. So I see value in where most people don't see value, and I think that's what we're supposed to focus on, against the consensus things. For now, against the consensus things, maybe, you know, don't sell the stock market here, wait for better levels. But overall, big picture for investors, underweight stocks, overweight cash, and look at some of these alternative assets like gold, silver, treasury bonds, the things that most people hate.
So, and of course, I think gold, it's funny, I think that gold is an asset that everybody should have some exposure to. Again, shouldn't be your whole portfolio. You should have a small percentage of gold in your portfolio, and now is the best time to buy a small percentage of what you're willing to commit to it. You know, we can't, one thing we know for sure, Mike, is you can never pick tops and bottoms, but this is an area that you'd like to start accumulating some of those hard assets, and you would take a small percentage. Let's say you're going to buy $10,000 worth of gold. Maybe you take $2,500 and you put it in right now, knowing that it could go lower, and then you could dollar average cost down. And if it goes higher and finds a base, then you've actually bought it better, and so you have to buy a little bit higher. But again, that's part of the trading world. And that's where I want you to tie this in for me, Mike. You know, there's trading that we do on the machine and retail traders, and then there's actually floor trading when there was paper flow and all those things. Take us through what it means and how much different it is and how much you really learn about the price discovery model and how the markets actually work. Because I think it'd be great for the listeners to hear from a guy who's an analyst, but that was also a trader on the floor.
Yeah, I think what you made is a very good point. Now, we both have been bullish gold and silver for a while, but we've been picking. You're supposed to pick at buying and investing. Putting it all at once doesn't really work, and I think the same thing about the equity market. Even if a lot of listeners didn't believe us about the equity market, they seem to have turned. The trend has turned. So you're supposed to be picking at taking your spots to sell when you get rallies, not when it really collapses. Wait for rallies, and they will always come. So that's the right thing to look at it, is we can have an opinion, we have a focus, overweight cash, overweight alternative assets, but it's how you do it's important. So I think on each dip, you know, we probably get a little more of a dip in gold or silver, and these are markets that are so beat up, once they start percolating more, maybe you add to positions. But the equity portion is, yes, thank you very much, take some profits, and, you know, if this whole thing turns, that would be wonderful, but it's still, you know, if the equity market continues to show strength, the Fed's going to tighten. And what that means is dollar strength and reduced earnings are declining. And that's just a kind of a lose-lose in the equity market. So I say pick your spots and do a little bit at a time.
Right. And then you don't have to worry about it because you're investing and you're taking a little bit of a position, which is what we want you to do. So, Mike, now the Fed is forecasted for 4 rate increases this year. Some say 2, some say 4. I say none. I already lost one stake to you, which I couldn't deliver because we couldn't get together when you were in Chicago. What's your take? What does the Fed raise this year? And in your opinion, how many times if they do?
I'm with you right now that they don't raise. To me, it's still a dream that they can go and hike again. And so one of the key things, the way I like to watch is as you watch the futures markets, what it says for Fed rate hike. So right now, the December Fed futures, Fed fund futures basically say the Fed's going to hike one time this year and then another half time. So it doesn't really know. But the key point is just a few months ago, it looked like they were going to hike over 2 times. So my bias is the Fed's not going to hike and they actually might be easing. And if they are hiking, that would be a dream and that would be wonderful if they can hike in this type of environment. But just basically what's happened last week is I think what's going to happen this year, and that would be wonderful if we all get through this without some major issues. And overall, I view that as a dream, and that I think as prudent investors, we're supposed to protect ourselves against what's been happening so far. And you know, if basically this continues, which we, you and I both expect in the bigger picture, the Fed's going to be easing; they'll have to ease.
Right. I think there's QE4 coming. But now, let me ask you a question from this perspective, because this is right in your wheelhouse as well. I believe that the Fed should just go ahead and raise and let the markets discover price. Let the bond markets discover price, because again, the manipulated part does not work well. It did not work well. It didn't really benefit everybody as it was supposed to. So I say they should just go ahead and raise. I mean, I was always in fan of raising. The only reason I bet you that they wouldn't is because I just didn't think they had the stones to do it. I would love to see them raise and get it up to some reasonable rates so that the banks will start providing liquidity, and so we'll start to see some action again versus what we have now. Tell me why that's the wrong theory, or do you agree with it?
I'm a bit suspicious. I'm careful with it because bottom line, as an ex-bond trader, is the only time the Fed really tightens is when they are fearful of inflation expectations getting a little out of hand. And they've already said that we're tightening despite the fact inflation trends continue down. We're just expecting them to turn up. And the one thing I think we can count on is their analysis of the economy inflation expectations that continue to be wrong. And that means that at some point they're going to have to turn around and say, oh, something's happening here that we're missing. So I think it'd be wonderful if they could. I think if they do, it's kind of akin to something what happened in basically 1937, when everybody thought the economy had recovered and we were good, and the Fed started hiking rates, and then it just collapsed. That is the fear I think we have now. And I think as far as the Fed to tighten in the environment we're right in right now, as of what happened last week, is almost impossible. They need to see financial markets volatility decline, markets increasing, and they need to see increase. I think bottom line is an increase in bond yields. You mentioned the bond yield market, and that's been the biggest thing for me since the beginning of this Fed tapering thing, is the bond yields in the U.S. continue to say that Fed, hey, there's no inflation in this country, and if there was, bond yields would be going up, not rates. Rates are what the Fed controls. They don't control bond yields too much unless they're buying them.
So as we forecast out, in your opinion, and again, only an opinion, only a guess, how deep does this correction go?
My target in S&P is around the 1500, 1600 level, and that is basically the old highs, and it's basically the level the Fed, that the market blew through when the Fed started QE3 in 2012. The market was right around 1400. It made it, blew through those old highs. That's a double high from the beginning of the decade and then from 2007, and I think we need to get back to those levels to really seek their own levels. Unfortunately, that's about, I think.
Well, it's not unfortunate. Look, the bottom line is if you're a shrewd and sharp investor and you're hedged, or you're working around it and changing your portfolio, then you would actually welcome that, because it gives you an opportunity to pick up some more bargains. My number has been 1586 all along, so we're right. We're thinking in the same direction, and I do believe that, you know, there's a very good chance that we get there. And you know, again, I don't know when. I can never say when. We can only go one level at a time. That's one thing about being a trader versus a trying to be a prophet. You know, trying to show how smart you are. I can only look at one level at a time, but my eventual target, based on exactly what Mike said, is 1586, which was he's at. Mike McClone, you're the best analyst. You always keep your mind straight. You should have been in cool. You could have been in Kool-Aid on Luke, because you always got your mind right, brother. I mean,
one of my heroes.
Yeah, I love it. Southern Martin and Paul Newman. But you're always on top of it, and certainly here at the Bubba Show, we appreciate having you on.
Thank you very much for having me. Good luck, everyone.
We have spent the back half of the day with our good friend Mike McClone, and again, a number one analyst. I'm just telling you, there you go. He gives it to you straight, without emotion, because he does have the trading background, and that's one thing that, you know, about the show is we understand how the markets work. So when we tell you something, we're just telling you real life scenarios. This has been the Bubba Show. We spent some time with Mike McClone here, and we will be back tomorrow, same time, same station. If you miss a show, go to libertytalk.fm and you can pick it up on demand. Other than everybody, the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same station, the Bubba Show. Good night, everybody.
Put some feel good in my soul.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.